No choice. It's dead weight. And with any luck, if some blues find the wag, they'll think we all died in the explosion.
Can't hurt.
When Dean was on board, Ryan looked around the beach and ordered a last check of the supplies. It would take the Grease Views hours to reach the APC, but time was still against them. The blues could arrive at any moment, and if they left something important behind, there would be no easy way to get it back. Doc called out from the cargo raft.
We have canned food, MRE packs, 7 ammo boxes, a case of Grenz, bedrolls, blankets, extra rope.
All of the rope.
Fuel, fresh water, pots and pans.
Med kit?
Mildred patted the bag at her side.
Say, ready to go.
Jack squatted by the mound, looking under the canvas. The sun broke the horizon at that moment, flooding the world with its dim light.
All right, then. Cast off.
At the helm, Christie snapped the mooring line like a whip, and the knot around the tree stump came undone. Urged on by the gentle currents, the rafts began to leisurely float away from the Carolina shoreline. Using the poles, the companions guided the rafts into deep water, where the saplings couldn't touch bottom. Drifting freely, Doc and Jack worked the tillers, steering them farther out until land was no longer in sight. Behind them, a faint trail of smoke was discernible, rising above the horizon from the smoldering remains of the cornfield. Shifting his weight from boot to boot, Dean tried to gain his balance on the moving raft.
I thought having the tires under the logs would make these things steady.
JB was spooning cold soup from a U.S. Army tin can.
It does. Dark Knight, you should have been with us a few years back when we took a raft trip down the Hudson in New York. Now that was a rough ride.
Slightly green, the boy nodded assent and sat on the deck, waiting for his stomach to catch up with him from the beach. Hours passed. The companions took turns at the helm and catching up on the sleep loss during the frenzied building of the raft during the night. The gentle current was getting stronger, urging them on a more southerly course, but they angled the rudder against the easy pull and maintained a steady course to the north and Tennessee. JB studied the sun overhead.
I make our speed at 3 knots. Not bad.
Wind is with us. That helps.
A bug buzzed near the raft, and a fish leapt from the basin and back into the water. The insect disappeared.
I'll catch us dinner.
Dean unscrewed the handle of his bowie knife, withdrawing line and hooks. Christie reached inside a box to retrieve a wad of grease-soaked paper.
You'll need bait. Try some of the fat back. It's getting old and we can't risk eating it anymore.
Phew, fish love bacon. Rancid the best.
Jack was whittling on a sliver of wood from the end of a log. Cutting off a tiny cube, Dean baited a hook and cast it overboard, raising and lowering the line to suggest life in the bait.
How odd.
Mildred was kneeling on the raft and almost sticking her face into the water.
Those are barracuda. Saltwater fish.
Must be muties.
Could be, but they seem to be dying.
Should they not?
That isn't the point. How did ocean fish get this far into a freshwater basin?
Maybe caught by the tide or something.
Perhaps. I only hope that...
The raft shook hard as it struck something underwater. JB shifted the helm, and Ryan did the same.
Sandbar?
Christie looked overboard, one hand gripping the ropes tight.
No, look!
Just below the surface of the water was the wreck of a sailing ship. The hull was smashed inward near the bow, schools of fish darting about the rigging and cabin. Christie read an inscription off the submerged ship.
Obsession. Nice name.
As they passed by, Doc reached out with his ebony stick and tapped the propellers. The blades turned without hindrance and spun merrily.
The engine is gone. She's been looted.
Jack grabbed a barge pole and thrust it downward, meeting no resistance.
Clear water. Must be floating freely.
Mildred frowned.
Lord, I hope so.
More and more wreckage filled the waters beneath them, until it seemed as if they were sailing over a submerged junkyard of smashed, rotting vessels.
10 o'clock.
Ryan pointed at the horizon, one arm on the helm. A smudge on the horizon grew steadily in size until they could see that the dark mass was a pile of wreckage, rising from the water like an island. An oil tanker lay among a pile of destroyers, gunboats, battleships, aircraft carriers, boats, and seagoing vessels of every kind, all jammed together.
Tumble down?
Blinking from the wind-blown spray on his face, Ryan agreed. When Skydark raped the world, debris from the nuked cities rained across the continent. The Manhattan blast threw cars and buses across the greater tri-state area, the vehicles blown off bridges and shotgunning out of tunnels to fly for 100 miles from the concussion of the nukes. Houses had been found on mountaintops, toilet seats in the middle of a desert, and once Ryan found an intact bridge spanning a grassy field in the middle of nowhere. Anything close to an atomic blast was vaporized, but the objects farther away were melted and sprayed outward, then smashed apart and sent flying, and after that, merely airborne.
The debris must have been drawn here by the current. Then one ship got caught in a sandbar, or maybe got entangled with another sunken ship. A second was caught, and so on, until there was an island.
Or maybe it was an oil rig. But I honestly don't recall if there was any deep-sea drilling going on offshore of North Carolina.
JB adjusted his glasses.
Wanna stop by and see if it's inhabited? Might have some wags we could trade for, salvage.
Ryan frowned.
Pointless to try. Even if we found a wag, how the hell would we get it to the shore? Best keep traveling.
Christy placed a hand on her blaster and loosened it in the holster.
Besides, after that bastard Poseidon, I don't trust sailors much.
Amen to that.
Rising from his chair, the old man shuffled across the bridge of the pre-dark battleship in bare feet, his single garment of stitched canvas highly decorated with embroidery patterns and service medals from 100 nations. Slanted windows fronted 3 sides of the room, affording a panoramic view of the river basin. On a clear day, green haze could be seen from the distant shore, but everywhere else the blue waters of the basin ruled supreme. The bridge was a half-circle of electronic equipment, as dead as the previous owners of the vessel. Radar screens were dark and lifeless, radio silent as the deep waters themselves. Near the stairwell, a stove made of an oil drum radiated heat. On top of the stove was a sterling silver punch bowl full of simmering fish stew, the tiny heads bobbing about, staring at nothing, amid the long strands of kelp and diced turtle eggs. Crumbling some dried mold into the stew, the Commodore used a spoon carved from a lifeboat to take a taste, then added a bit more. The stores in the holds of the ships that comprised the island were finally running low after so many decades, but that didn't matter anymore, as all of his people would soon be dead. The thought saddened him, and the white hare walked to the southern window to gaze out upon the featureless vista of his watery domain. The Commodore sighed. The crew of the Navy had lived here since Skydark. Sometimes they sent expeditions to the shores for food or tools, but the crew always came back. There didn't seem to be any other living beings in the world. They found ruins, but no people. Just twisted, shambling mockeries of people, mindless creatures who wantonly killed with their clawed hands and howled at the sight of fire. Sometimes a hellhound was found, but thankfully those were rare and very deadly. Now the Navy men were alone, the last humans in the world. A plague had swept through the Islandville 10 winters ago, killing half the population and every woman, even the babes. For over 10 long years, the surviving men had lived in the towering pile of metal. He knew some of his crew found relief doing things of which the manifest didn't approve, but if it kept them quiet, so be it. In life, some poor bastard was always the barrel boy. A smudge of smoke on the western horizon caught his attention, and the white hare walked to the telescope to train the instrument in that direction. The focus was poor, one lens replaced by a lens from a pair of eyeglasses, but he managed to achieve a kind of clarity. The smoke wasn't the plume of a seagoing vessel heading their way. There was just some sort of fire on the mainland. But under the magnification of the scope, he noticed something moving on the water, moving against the current. How could that be? At first he couldn't believe his eyes, thinking madness had finally claimed his mind. But the longer he watched, the more convinced he became that this was real. Not a delusion brought on by loneliness and advanced age. The Commodore cackled as he adjusted the focus of his telescope. Two tiny rafts were coming this way, and two of the occupants were clearly women, a redhead and a black woman.
Women? Those are women.